This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. We have a dog. Her name is Sasha. She's almost four. She's a standard poodle. She's got curly, fluffy, soft black hair, and she's very adorable. And she's a part of our family, and we care a lot about taking good care of her. And that includes feeding her high-quality dog food like Merrick's. Founded in Hereford, Texas, Merrick has been crafting high-quality dog food for over 30 years. Real is Merrick's recipe. They always use deboned meat, fish, or poultry as the number one ingredient. Merrick creates home-style recipes like real Texas beef and sweet potato or Grammy's pot pie, so you can feel good about what you're feeding your pet. I mean, you know, you come home from being out, and your dog is there to greet you, and, like, that's one of the best things about having a pet. You know, you come home, the dog's happy to see you, and they're hungry. And you want to reciprocate that good feeling they give you when you walk in the door. You want to give to them in the form of some high-quality food. So check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it.
Tell me about how the two of you worked together on the recipes.
When we were testing the recipes, I mostly cooked and Rishika tasted and gave feedback. But she also helped with a lot of the easier recipes.
I tasted and I also helped on little things like stirring and cracking eggs.
This is 6-year-old Rishika and 13-year-old Radhika talking with their mother, Neha, about testing recipes for a new cookbook.
And you're a super picky eater, Rishika. So how did the cookbook help you with your picky eating?
It helped me a lot. I got encouraged to eat more food.
And different kinds of food?
Mm-hmm. I tried that panzanella once, and it was so delicious.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. So how did the kids you just heard get this coveted gig as recipe testers? Well, their cousin wrote the cookbook. That cousin is Priya Krishna. You've heard Priya here on the show before. She's a reporter for the New York Times food section, and next week she'll release Priya's Kitchen Adventures, a cookbook for kids. Back in 2019, Priya published Indianish, Recipes and Antics from a Modern American Family. It was a tribute to her mom's mashups of Indian and American dishes, with recipes like roti pizza and dosa potatoes with lime and ketchup. Priya describes her new kids' cookbook as the little sister to Indianish. Later on, we'll dig into that idea more and talk about how these two cookbooks fit into the larger themes of Priya's work. But first, I wanted to talk with her about the story behind this cookbook for kids, which features recipes from a wide range of cuisines. The seeds for the idea were planted in Priya's childhood. Growing up, travel was a huge part of her life.
I had a Lisa Frank suitcase. Do you remember Lisa Frank in the 90s?
Vaguely.
It was like that artist that did like the unicorns and butterflies that looked like colorful explosions.
Right.
My mom used to like make fun of me because I would just dump all sorts of useless crap in the suitcase. Like a doll that took up half the suitcase, my like Game Boy. And to this day, I'm like, I travel so often. I'm still horrible at packing.
Priya's mom, Ritu, worked for the airline industry for decades, first as a software programmer, then as a manager. One big perk of the job? Free plane tickets. But there was a catch. She could only get free standby tickets. The whole family could go anywhere the airline was headed to for free if there were empty seats on the flight at the last minute. If the flight was full, they were out of luck.
A big chunk of my childhood was just days spent at airports. You know, we had destinations in mind of where we would want to go, and sometimes we would end up on a plane to the destination we wanted to go. Sometimes we'd end up somewhere unexpected. Sometimes we'd end up going nowhere at all because our fate was dependent on standby lists.
What was, like, the most extreme disparity between a place that where you thought was the leading contender for where you were going to go and where you ended up?
I mean, I think it was usually when we, like, packed for the Caribbean and then we ended up back at home. And I had dreams of like being on the beach in the afternoon, but right. I would just be in like suburban Dallas with a suitcase full of swimsuits.
Right. This is not the Caribbean.
Yeah.
When they did go somewhere, the family had traveling down to a science.
We would be going through the security line and my mom would be like militant. Like, never use the circular bins. Because you'll always leave stuff in the circular bins. Hold on to your boarding pass. Keep it in your pocket at all times. Like, keep it in your hand. Because in some international countries, they require you to show your boarding pass after you go to security. She taught me, you know, the best games to pass the time on the plane. This is before the era of in-flight entertainment. You know, we would play War and Mad Libs. To this day, I refer to cities by their airport codes, not as cities, because that's just how we were raised.
Right. Throughout her travels, young Priya was often thinking about food, but not always in ways you might expect. Like when they served the in-flight meal on the plane.
I would go from person to person during dinner service and ask if they were using their pack of butter, and I would just store it in my fanny pack, I guess just for, like, if you need emergency butter. And I remember one time we landed in India, and it was, like, July. The heat was, like, oppressive.
Oh, God.
And I had my fanny pack full of butter packets, and I think we were, like, in Delhi, and my mom just saw, like, liquid trickling down my leg. I was like, what is in your fanny pack?
Did it ever come in handy? Was anyone ever just like, you know, eating a piece of toast or cooking something or like, what I wouldn't give for a pat of butter?
I'm ashamed to say that I think I ate a lot of them just by themselves, just straight butter.
Priya says she was an adventurous eater. It wasn't all straight pats of butter. She went around the world with her family, keeping a journal of her travels and of all the foods she tried along the way.
I just remember, like, we went to China and I became obsessed with green tea and things flavored like green tea. Like, we went to France and I had chocolate mousse for the first time and it just, like, changed my life. I had a crepe for the first time. I had a scone in England for the first time. In Egypt, I tried hummus for the first time. This was, like, the pre-Sabra era. And then, you know, my mom and I, we both loved talking about food. So, like, after every trip, we would just talk about the things that we ate. We would just be so excited about, like, I wonder what was in that. So we would come home, and my mom's first instinct, I feel like, when she tastes something delicious in a restaurant is always like, I can make this at home. Like, any challenge she is up to. So we would taste something, we would come home, and my mom and I would do research. If we had, like, neighbors who were from that country, we'd ask them what they thought. And we would set about making our own version. And sometimes the version adhered. We were trying to make, like, a version that was exactly the same as what we had. But sometimes we would put our own twist on it. You know, like my mom coming back from London, having discovered English breakfast, but making a version in which she stirs cumin seeds into the baked beans and puts chaat masala on top.
Take that, English
yeah.
people.
Yeah, exactly. Reverse colonization.
Her mom's enthusiasm for cooking rubbed off on Priya. As a kid, Priya loved experimenting in the kitchen. But even when she was in middle school, when she should have been old enough to make at least some basic meals by herself, her parents still weren't keen on the idea.
There are a number of reasons for this. One, I was left-handed and they were all right-handed, and they just the sight of me using like a knife with my left hand was very jarring for them. The second thing is I had a horrible habit of like leaving ovens on, leaving stoves on.
That sounds like a better reason to not make
you cook. I was just so forgetful. And so if I cooked, it was usually with heavy parental supervision. So this is like how my mom and I bonded, is like we would set aside an afternoon, set aside an evening, and she would like closely supervise me as I cooked. And when I was little, you know, a lot of it was my mom and I kind of making things up as we go, getting recipes from friends. But eventually I got really interested in kids' cookbooks. And I was gifted one called the Pretend Soup Cookbook. And I loved that cookbook for so many reasons. It introduced me to like popovers and green spaghetti, aka pesto with pasta. I'd never tried these things before. But I remember one thing that stood out to me from that book, and a lot of the kids' cookbooks that I was gifted in the, you know, coming years, was like the food felt like kid food. Like it felt like I was reading off a kid's menu. And I was one of those kids who like didn't always want the kid's menu food. I wanted the adult food. And I think I wanted to feel like I could make food that adults would want to eat and that would make me feel grown up.
As soon as she graduated college, Priya dove into a career writing about food. She worked for the food magazine Lucky Peach for a while, then moved on to writing stories and recipes for Bon Appetit and started making videos for their increasingly popular YouTube channel. In 2019, she published Indianish, which became a bestseller. It also got a reaction that Priya wasn't expecting.
I started getting a lot of calls from children's book authors, and they said, the tone in Indian-ish feels really youthful. We were wondering if you've ever given any thought to writing for kids. And, you know, I thought about, like, okay, I could write, like, a children's book. But then I was home, and my mom was showing me the Pretend Soup cookbook. And then my mom was like, remember, you used to write all those things that you used to eat in your journals. I started reading my journals. And I was like, hey, it's like a pretty nice template of recipes here. And I thought, like, my childhood is a pretty cool, makes for a pretty cool narrative. This kid who gets to travel the world because her mom has this cool job in airlines. And so I just, like, went to my agent and was like, I would like to write a kid's cookbook. And in many ways, it felt so out of left field. But in all these other ways, it just felt like a continuation of what I've always wanted to do with my work.
Coming up, Priya tries to figure out exactly how she's going to write a kid's cookbook that'll continue the work she did on Indian-ish. But first, she recruits kids as recipe testers and does not get the feedback she was expecting. Stick around.
Hope you're hungry, because it's time for some ads.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, a business tripper, or a long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. They've got over 7,000 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels, and you will get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. I especially love those Cambria Hotels. They have locally inspired hotel bars with all kinds of specialty cocktails, downtown locations right in the center of all the action. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces. That way, if you're a business traveler, you'll be able to get all your work done. On-site restaurants, fantastic. And then at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles and great pools for the whole family and spacious rooms. I mean, if you have kids, you understand the importance of the pool. If you stay at a hotel with a pool, almost nothing else matters. Fortunately, all the Choice Hotels take care of all the other stuff too, but I mean, a pool is a great start. Whatever kind of vacation you're going on, whatever kind of travel you're doing, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. The weather's warming up. Have you nailed down your summer travel plans yet? I can tell you, we're working on ours and things are booking up, which is why you should be thinking about Norwegian Cruise Line. They have been raising the standards of cruising for more than 55 years. Let me tell you, when you cruise with NCL, you get award-winning specialty restaurants, immersive entertainment, and the most thrilling experiences at sea. Now look, one of the great things about cruises in general is that you can visit and explore all kinds of different destinations, all with the ease of unpacking your bag just once. But Norwegian Cruise Line, they take cruising to another level, and they take food to another level. With no set dining and entertainment times and no formal dress codes, you have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation. They have an incredible variety of truly authentic and fresh dining and bar experiences complemented by exceptional service. Listen to this. There are up to 8 complimentary and 9 specialty dining options per ship and up to 23 bar and lounge options. Come see why NCL's guest first philosophy means exceptional service and unforgettable memories. Book your next vacation at ncl.com. A few years back, my friend Justin Warner from Food Network moved out to South Dakota. He opened a ramen joint, and he is always posting pictures of all the great food he's not only cooking, but eating all over South Dakota. He's always telling me to come visit. And you know, one of the best ways to experience a new place is to eat your way through it. But it's equally important to live your way through it, too. And when you summer in South Dakota, you can fill up on all the lake days, hikes, rides, and small-town strolls that'll leave you with a regained sense of wonder and a hunger to do it all over again. See why there's so much South Dakota, so little time at TravelSouthDakota.com. At Boar's Head, delicious is in the details. And you see that in their incredible selection of hummus flavors. Boar's Head hummus is expertly crafted to achieve the perfect balance of creamy texture and refined taste. You can taste those chickpeas. You can taste the tahini. You can taste a little bit of acidity. It's got it all. I especially love their roasted red pepper hummus made with fire-roasted peppers. You can even taste a little bit of that char. It's perfectly dippable. It's perfectly spreadable. This is the kind of thing you always want to have on hand in your refrigerator. Dip, scoop, spread, or smear Boar's Head hummus to your heart's content. Hummus so extraordinary, it can only be Boar's Head. Compromise elsewhere.
Hey.
Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. If you're a fan of Priya Krishna's, you're probably also a fan of Sola and Ham El-Waly, who also do videos for the New York Times food section. So I hope you'll check out our new podcast, Deep Dish with Sola and Ham. In each episode, Sola and Ham deep dive into a dish to share a surprising story behind it. Then they head home to cook up something inspired by it. It's part detective show, part quirky quest through history, and part cooking class. The final episode of season one was all about bagels. Now, most bagels today are rolled by machines, but Sola got to learn how to hand roll bagels from someone who's been doing it for years, Stephen Natale.
My father owned a bagel store for 27 years.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you know, Dad, I want to learn how to roll bagels, because that's a skill. That's a real skill. Now it's like I'm a robot for bagels, you know?
Stephen showed Sola how he rolls the perfect bagel, and then Sola, who had never rolled bagels before, gave it a try.
All right, I guess we could work with that. Oh, we're gonna have to work with that. I don't think we have any other option.
You'll have to listen to the whole episode to hear how they turned out, and to hear the larger story of the Bagel Bakers Union of the 1930s and 40s and their battles with the mob. This is a tale that includes everything from baker pranks to death threats. All four episodes of season one of Deep Dish are right here in the Sporkful feed. Just scroll back to January and February to check them out. All right, back to my conversation with Priya Krishna, whose kids' cookbook, Priya's Kitchen Adventures, comes out next week and is available for pre-order right now. In 2021, Priya was a seasoned recipe writer and best-selling author, but she'd never written recipes for kids. And when she was younger, cooking in the kitchen, she'd often forget to turn off the stove. So she realized her recipes needed to talk to two audiences, kids and their parents.
You're like, all right, I don't want them to have to do like intense chopping. I want minimal special equipment required, food processors, blenders. I want it to be like, to just be like self-contained, like a kid, a cutting board and, you know, maybe some measuring cups in a pot. Minimize cleanup, because who's the person who's going to end up doing the dishes? The adult.
So the recipes needed to be accessible, but she didn't want them to sound like the kids' menu. She wanted her readers to feel like they were cooking grown-up food from all over the world. In the France chapter, there's a recipe for artichokes with butter. From Mexico, she has watermelon agua fresca. From Japan, salmon onigiri. But how best to create recipes from a range of cuisines in a way that kids could understand them?
I feel like anyone who wants to become a better recipe writer should write a recipe for kids, because it really teaches you like how to write clearly and how much jargon we use in recipes. Certain phrases have become so common in cookbooks that we just don't think about what they actually mean and if it's the clearest way to say something, like saute onions until translucent. I was like, well, I don't really think that's a useful instruction for a kid. What does that mean? What is translucent? So you think like, okay, saute the onions until you can like smell that they're getting sweet, till you can almost see through them and into the pan. One of the hardest ones was folding whipped cream into chocolate. At first, I literally just had it as like fold whipped cream into chocolate. And then I had that moment where I was like, oh, wait, that's not actually clear at all.
Right. You know? Yeah, kids feel like they're trying to like fold a shirt.
Yeah, or exactly.
Right.
And like, so I was in a group chat with a bunch of friends and I was like, if you had to describe folding whipped cream to chocolate to a kid, how would you describe it? And I got a bunch of responses. And then I basically read the responses and then got whipped cream and the chocolate out and started like physically doing it.
Like in a very literal way. Like I'm going to do exactly what this tells me to do.
Yeah, exactly. And I figured out like, okay, I have to like you're putting the spatula in, you're moving the bowl while you're moving the spatula and you're doing it in a circular motion. And you really like break down what are the steps involved in folding. And as I was writing this, I was like, you know what? Like an adult recipe should it just explain what folding is.
Right.
Why do we say fold and assume everyone knows what that means?
In the book, Priya ended up describing folding like this. What you do is scoop the whipped cream into the bowl with the melted chocolate in as few scoops as possible. Then use a rubber spatula to slice vertically down the middle of the chocolate and cream, lifting some of the cream and chocolate mixture over the rest while moving the spatula in a wide circular motion. And that sounds pretty good. But to be sure it worked, Priya assembled a team of kid recipe testers. Some of her relatives have kids, so she got them involved. And then those relatives enlisted more kids. You've written recipes, Priya, for major publications, mm-hmm. Bon Appetit, New York Times. And I know that in that process, you work with like high-level pros who are giving you feedback on your recipes. Compare that feedback to the feedback of your little kid and tween recipe testers.
I have never worked with better recipe testers.
Why?
They were amazing. I feel like, you know, when you're an editor, they teach you like the compliment sandwich, like start with something nice, then give the feedback, then say something nice again. Kids don't know about compliment sandwiches. They just are going to tell it to you exactly as it is, exactly how they felt. And it was, I found it very refreshing. The feedback I got was just so clear cut. They didn't mince words. Oftentimes they either loved it or they hated it. Like I remember there was a noodle recipe that I developed from the Japan chapter. And one kid just said, yucky. Like he literally was just like, yucky.
And did that one make it in?
I cut it. Okay. It's not in the book anymore.
I remember seeing that one. Are there any other specific bits of feedback that stand out?
Kids would really pick up on things that I just didn't think that they would pick up on.
Like what?
So like, you know how crepe batter is like this really amazing balance of sweet and salty so that it lends itself to both putting Nutella in it.
Right.
But you can also put ham and cheese.
Right.
And it's mild enough but flavorful enough that it can go in both directions. A kid wrote exactly that in their feedback. They were like, I tried the crepe by itself and I was so amazed at how it could taste equally good with cheese as it did with chocolate. And I was like, wow, that's really profound.
Sometimes the feedback went beyond observations and turned into really useful notes. Like when Radhika, Priya's cousin who you heard at the start of the show, was testing the dahi bala from the Indian chapter. Here's Radhika.
When I tried that the first time, it was really good, but there were leftovers, so I let them sit overnight. And the next day, everything marinated together and became even more flavorful and really delicious.
Priya liked that note so much, she included it in the dahi bala recipe in the book. Then there's another kind of reaction she sometimes got that she also loved.
The best feedback I could get, and this didn't always happen. Sometimes it was like a kid hated broccoli to begin with, and they still hate broccoli making this recipe. But sometimes it was like, I don't usually like tomatoes, but roasted in this dish, I really liked them.
That was the feedback from Rishika, the other kid you heard at the start of the show. Rishika overcame her dislike of tomatoes to eat them in the panzanella.
Rishika, she hates so many foods. She has so many food preferences. And so it was an interesting test, especially with Rishika, to be like, can I get Rishika to like corn?
The answer to that is yes, she did. Rishika said she really liked the corn when recipe testing, even though she had a hard time eating it because she's lost so many of her baby teeth. And both kids did more than test recipes for the book. They're in a lot of the photos.
Oftentimes, we would just put the dish in front of them and be like, do what you would do with this, or like cook it how you would cook it. And we would end up with a photo that we didn't expect. Like, for example, we put a bowl of ramen in front of Radhika, and she sort of struggled to use the chopsticks, but eventually kind of figured it out. And so in the book, you see this series of photos of her like figuring out how to use chopsticks and feed herself the noodles. They are the unofficial, like, mascots of the book. They not only tested recipes, but they were hand models and actual models in the book. I really wanted brown faces, brown hands. I wanted people to know that this was coming from a brown narrator, and I feel like they sort of just became, like, perfect stand-ins for my younger self.
So Priya looked for recipes with her younger self in mind, recipes that felt exciting and grown up. That means the book includes udon with soft-boiled egg, stewed fish, and an Egyptian koshari with a spicy, vinegary sauce called dakka.
What I didn't want to do was dumb down the flavors of the recipe. That was one thing I didn't touch. I wanted the recipes to feel clear, straightforward, but if they called for fish sauce, I wanted to keep the fish sauce in. If they called for chilies, I wanted to keep the chili in. And I would include a note that's like, if you don't like spicy, omit the chilies, decrease them. But when I say, you know, creating recipes that are simple and straightforward, I did not want that to mean whitewashed.
And Priya didn't just want this book to look different from other children's cookbooks, which as a whole are not super diverse. She also wanted to approach travel stories for kids in a different way. So alongside a photo of her with her family visiting England when she was younger, she writes that the British violently colonized India for hundreds of years. In the section on Trinidad and Tobago, she writes about the South Asians and West Africans who came through the country as forced laborers. She learned about some of these stories firsthand during her own childhood travels.
When I was writing about, for example, Egypt, I was reading my diaries, and one of the things I noticed was going to the Cairo Museum, and there being nothing there. Like, it was such a sad museum with so little of the country's history, and asking my mom explaining that all of that was in the British Museum, that the real Rosetta Stone was in the British Museum. There was just a replica in the Cairo Museum. And I don't think at the time I really understood about colonization and about, you know, the fact that so many of these countries have basically been pillaged for their wealth. But it just felt important to just not shy away from that, to talk about it.
And the more that Priya talked with kids, the more confident she became that they were ready for a cookbook like this one.
I'm really impressed with the way my cousins talk to their kids about racism, about inequality. Like, I spoke at my nephew Kai's class, and he asked me what my preferred gender pronouns were and what my experiences were dealing with inequity in my industry. And I was like, you know what? Like, we can have these conversations with kids.
For Priya, this cookbook is about more than recipes and travel stories from around the world. It's also about reframing what kind of food is accessible, what kind of food a kid or grown-up could just whip up when they're in the mood.
I grew up in a world where, in food magazines and cookbooks, the idea of simple and weeknight, the recipes you associate with that are very, like, white-coated. And my hope is that that notion just doesn't exist for the next generation. And I think it starts with what people see as simple, everyday, weeknight, easy. And I try to use those words in this book. I try to normalize that as I make this fool on a weeknight, this, you know, easy hummus, this, you know, weeknight dal.
If a recipe was presented to an audience in food media, if the recipe sort of came from a non-European place, right? It was sort of presented like, here's a project.
Yeah, like a project recipe, exactly.
Right, but
exactly.
Like, if you are used to cooking with these ingredients, it's something you can throw together on a Tuesday night.
Or, like, they would only choose the dishes from a cuisine that were, like, 12, like, 15 ingredients. You
right.
have to make, like, 6 spice blends, all these sub-recipes. But every cuisine has difficult recipes and easy recipes.
As I said earlier, Priya calls this new kids cookbook the little sister to her previous book, Indianish. Her mission with Indianish was not just to explore her own Indian American heritage through food, but also to challenge the very idea of what an American cookbook could be. In 2019, the year Indianish came out, I had Priya here on the show, along with Madhur Jaffrey, the legendary Indian American actor and cookbook author. Madhur had written several iconic Indian cookbooks for American audiences starting in the 70s. She was always working to persuade non-Indians to get more comfortable with Indian recipes and ingredients, to stop viewing them as so foreign and different. At the live show where she and Priya were my guests, we discussed how much progress had been made. I want to play a clip from that conversation for you, because this is something that I think about often. Are you cringing?
That was one of, like, my favorite things that I did for Indianish, but I'm also always like,
it was great.
What was I like?
You were phenomenal, and I still think about that conversation a lot. And here's one clip that I think about very often.
In categories like on Amazon, they separate books from American and international, and any book that basically isn't, like, roast chicken is put into the, like, international category. But, like, I was born in America. I was raised in America. My parents now have lived in America longer than they lived in India. We are as American as the roast chicken people. So I just, like, wanted to, I don't know, I just, like, wanted to make it very clear, like, this is an Indian cookbook, but it's also an American cookbook. We can be both. They're not mutually exclusive.
So now here we are 5 years later. Where do you think we are since you said that?
I think progress has been made. Like, I will say in 2020, 2021, I saw a lot of authors of color getting big book deals, a lot of authors of color getting to write books that felt more like general reference books. People like Sola, people like Hetty McKinnon getting to write these books that were just like, this is just how to cook. This is just everyday recipes. Right. I will say I still see Indianish get filed in international sections at Barnes & Noble. And even though I put American family on the cookbook, people just see Indian and they put it in international. I think that if you just look at the apparatus of cookbooks in general, still a lot of white people at the top, a lot of white editors. I think we just have to think about who are the people in power and who are the decision makers. So, like, yes, we can be giving people of color cookbook deals, but then how are we treating those authors of color? How are we categorizing their books? How are we editing their books? Are we whitewashing their recipes? Are we treating their food in a way that feels true to them? Or are we trying to make it palatable for a white Western audience? And I think in that realm, we still have a lot of work to do.
Separate from the sort of internal machinations of the industry, the food, cookbook, publishing industry, just in terms of the way many average Americans view different cuisines, like in terms of the perception of Indian food as being quote-unquote foreign versus just as American as roast chicken, where do you feel like we're at with that?
I actually think we've done good work. I get tagged weekly in people making dal, people making saag, people making aloo gobi, and they're not Indian. I think that we are at a really interesting moment where people's weeknight food is getting a lot more diverse. I think cookbooks are to thank. I think TikTok is hugely to thank. Obviously, still, if you look at, you know, the top cookbooks, they're still white authors, white recipes a lot of the time. But I think just day to day, anecdotally, seeing what I'm seeing on my Instagram, I think we've made a good amount of progress. I feel really proud. I once wrote, like, I want everyone to be making dal. And I think a lot of people are making dal.
That's Priya Krishna. Her new cookbook is Priya's Kitchen Adventures, a cookbook for kids. It comes out April 30th, but you can pre-order it right now. You can also read her food writing at the New York Times and check out her video series On the Job on the New York Times YouTube channel. One more note, we're giving away a copy of Priya's Kitchen Adventures. To enter to win your copy, all you gotta do is sign up for the Sporkful newsletter by May 10th. If you're already on our mailing list, you're already entered into this and all of our giveaways. Open to U.S. and Canada addresses only. Sign up now at sporkful.com/newsletter. Next week on the show, I talk with music producer and songwriter Benny Blanco. He's collaborated with artists from Ed Sheeran to Justin Bieber to Rihanna and many more. And now he's written his first cookbook. Turns out this guy is obsessed with food. We're going to talk about his love of food and his love of throwing crazy house parties in L.A. That's next week. While you wait for that one, if you're a picky eater or a parent of picky eaters, I hope you check out an episode from a few weeks back. It's about growing up as a picky eater and why so many people still judge picky eaters. Check out that episode wherever you got this one. This episode was produced by me along with managing producer
Emma Morgenstern
and senior producer
Andres O'Hara.
It was edited by
Nora Ritchie.
Our engineer is
Jared O'Connell.
Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher Studios. Our executive producers are Nora Ritchie and Colin Anderson. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
I'm Leo from Austin, Texas, reminding you to eat more, eat better, eat more better.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This November, I'm going back to Italy, leading a food tour there, and I want to brush up on my Italian. And for that, I'm turning to Rosetta Stone. It's the most trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. And for a very limited time, Sporkful listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/sporkful. That's half off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/sporkful today.